Donald in the kitchen talks about food. Donald in the kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio.
The Donald on the Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where pub means community. More information can be found at www.themuckyduckpub.com or from Marcus at telephone number 232-8888.
Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal,
and I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table, and this is our home kitchen table. This is the 18th home kitchen, Donna Lana, in a series of being socially isolated, but we are not isolated because we have this fine community radio station, and we come to you and talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We do have opinions.
Oh, yes. We're two opinionated women, you know.
Some things. You've been listening to some encore presentations of the Donald on the Kitchen the past couple weeks. And last week on the Donald on the Kitchen, there was an encore presentation about sweet corn featuring Ray Olson, a fine sweet corn grower. Ooh. And I must say, the sweet corn is in. Summer is here. I have enjoyed sweet corn. Oh, please get out there and enjoy that old sweet corn because it is here. It is Iowa. And what else has been going? Oh, for the first time ever, I decided to bite the bullet. There's been this, if for people that are used to social dancing, Scottish dancing, contra dancing, all kinds of dancing.
Lana is a dancer.
I love to dance. That's one thing I do miss. And you can dance virtually online via Zoom. And I thought, well, let's give it a try. Okay, I gave it a try. I must say, it's kind of like kissing your cousin. You know? It's okay. But you can dance. One nice thing you can see. Nice faces of all the people that you used to dance with in the community, and a local band was playing. It was lovely. So virtual dancing, it's okay in a pinch.
So what, you just turned on your monitor and danced around in your living room?
That's it. And everybody else was kind of in their own little window dancing around. So if you watched it, you got really dizzy for one thing. But this was English country dancing, and it's kind of a mind game anyway. It's going through all of the moves and kind of getting your body into it, and it was fun. It was fun, and the band was good, and it was nice to connect up with people.
Okay, but well, obviously you'll be happier when you're back to the real
thing. I think the bands in the community will be too, and the dancers. Another thing I want to mention: the past couple weeks, there was this comet that visited us, Neowise Comet. I don't know who came up with the name, Neowise Comet. I went out about 2 weeks ago, looked up where they told me to look up at the bottom of the Big Dipper. And if you looked really hard with your eyes, you could see this little smear that was not a star. It was kind of this little smear. And and per suggestion, I did take some binoculars and I looked. In binoculars, it was definitely a comet. So we saw another one. It's so nice to go out and do things like
this
that.
This is not a flashy one.
No. It's there.
It's subtle.
It's just amazing what goes on out of this world. Oh, goodness. I want to share with you, believe it or not, Emily Dickinson had something to say about astral phenomenon and comets and things. Here is a short poem from Emily Dickinson about the night sky. Lightly stepped a yellow star to its lofty place, loosed the moon her silver hat from her lustral face, hall of evening softly lit as an astral hall. Father, I observed the heaven, you are punctual.
Punctual, okay.
Well, because they could tell us. How do they know? It's going to be there at a certain time. It's amazing. Also, during that same time, I found out from kind of looking at websites that there were planets lined up on the southern horizon, like Jupiter, Mars, Venus, Saturn. I think there are four of them. And they knew. They're punctual. Things happen. It's amazing.
Yeah, and they've known these things for quite a long time.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. So today on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we are going to consider what's going on in the garden. I have a bit of a tomato report here. And Donna has some fine recipes to share.
Well, so we are heading into the best part of the Iowa season in terms of gardening and food production. Boy, August and September, we are the lucky people on the planet right now. So been a lot of good eating going on, and we're just at the beginning of it. We've got the whole 2 months to look forward to. And because we're in kind of being cautious with the COVID, one of the things that's been going on amongst my circle of friends is we've been like cooking for each other and like delivering to front porches and stuff. So I have some really good recipes from several different friends that I was going to share with you today. So my Swedish neighbor, Ingrid Anderson, is quite the baker. And she made something for her husband, Walter's birthday a few weeks ago. It's called Brita's Hot Milk Cake. Now, Brita was Walter's aunt who's fresh off the boat from Sweden. And this recipe comes from the 1940s. And, you know, it tastes like something from my childhood as well. It's a lovely recipe. And we will post these on our recipe page on the website. So Brita's milk cake, I'm going to quickly read Ingrid's recipe. It's a sheet pan. It's a flat cake. You know, it's not a layered cake like that. But it's really, really good. So for the cake, you need 2 eggs, 1 cup of sugar, 1 cup of flour, 1/2 cup of hot milk, 3 tablespoons of butter, 1 teaspoon of something Ingrid's calling Swedish vanilla sugar, which she says is available at iGourmet or replaced with real vanilla beans. Ingrid says extract is not as good, which I would agree. I think there's another product just called vanilla sugar. So it's sugar that's been scented heavily with a vanilla bean, or you can make your own by burying a vanilla bean in some sugar for a long enough time that the essence creeps out into the sugar. Anyway, so, teaspoon of baking powder, 1/4 teaspoon of salt. And then there's frosting, 5 tablespoons of brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of soft butter, 2 tablespoons heavy cream, and 1 cup unsweetened coconut flakes. So here's how you make it. You mix the flour, the vanilla sugar, the baking powder, and the salt together. Then you beat together the eggs for 4 minutes, and you add the sugar and continue beating for 4 or 5 minutes. I would say, you know, a handheld electric mixer would help with this. And then you gradually add the flour mixture and carefully combine until it's all smooth. Then you heat the milk and the butter until the butter melts, hence the name hot milk cake. And you pour this into the batter. You bake at 325 degrees in a 9 by 9 inch dish for 25 minutes or until the cake comes out dry. Then for the frosting, you combine all the ingredients and spread on top of the cake and put this under the broiler for 2 or 3 minutes. And Ingrid says, watch carefully because, of course, you don't want to burn it, and then enjoy. And I have to say, I'm going to try it myself because it was really good. Really, really good.
You gave me a taste, too, and it did remind me of my mom or grandmother made it.
Exactly.
It's not a heavy cake, but it's a substantial cake, and it was good.
It was really, really good, and I could, you know, as I was eating it, I couldn't even tell you what the throwback flavor was, but when Ingrid told me it was from the 1940s, of course, when they were still making these kinds of things in the 50s, this was certainly before probably people were using cake mixes or anything like this, but it's really, really yummy, I have to tell you, and it looks like it's fairly simple to make, so that's Brita's or Ingrid Anderson's hot milk cake, and we will put that one up on the on our recipe webpage. So the other thing that Ingrid gave me, except I I'm having trouble making this go away. Why am I not getting this? My computer. Oh, help. All right. Well, I was going to tell you about Ingrid's cinnamon rolls, but I can't pull it up. So we'll have to skip that right now.
Oh, all right. Well.
Oh, okay. I did it. Okay.
So if you talk to the computer and say you don't care anymore, then it works.
So the other thing, and she's left me these on the front porch before. These are my favorite. Unfortunately, I can eat several in a row. I like them because they're not huge, and they're also not super, super sweet, like sometimes, and they don't have white gooey frosting on them. So they're not overwhelmingly sweet like American cinnamon rolls. So this recipe, Ingrid says, makes about 60 to 70 rolls. So there's two parts. There's the dough part, which is a yeasted recipe, and then there's the gooey cinnamon stuff that you put in. So you start with 2.5 teaspoons of yeast and 7/8 cup of raw cane sugar, 2 cups of cold water, 1 tablespoon of somewhat coarsely mushed cardamom seeds.
Good idea.
Yeah. That really goes well with the cinnamon that comes later. 2 eggs and 2.2, a kilo, which is 2.2 pounds of organic wheat flour. Bread flour is okay. I probably would use whole wheat pastry flour just because I like that. And 150 grams or 2/3 cup of organic butter and 2 teaspoons of fine sea salt. Then for the dough, so you proof the yeast in 1/4 cup of finger warm water for 10 minutes. So you just like let it sit there, right? Then you add the yeast mixture, the cardamom, and the water and the eggs to your mixer bowl. And you whisk the ingredients, and then you add most of the flour and save 1 cup for the next step. You mix on a low speed. So I would say having a stand mixer really helps for this. For 6 minutes, then you add the tempered butter and about 1 tablespoon at a time and let this be worked into the dough. Then you add the salt and the remaining cup of flour to bind it all together. Mix on a higher speed for another 5 minutes.
Boy, those Swedish recipes are big on mixing.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Then you put the dough in the fridge for overnight covered, right? Okay, then the next day, you warm the oven to 450 degrees, a little high. You mix the soft butter and the sugar and the cinnamon. And she says, for the filling, she says, okay, you have the dough. Then she uses cupcake baking cups, right?
Mm, okay.
And more butter and sea salt and more raw sugar. And she says 2 rounded tablespoons of what she's calling potent cinnamon. So okay. Now, and she's right about this. You know, if you've had your cinnamon sitting on your shelf for 5 years, it's not going to have much flavor.
Right.
So I think she's probably just using classic cinnamon, but you could also use like
Mexican cinnamon,
Ceylon cinnamon, which is not as spicy, or the, what's the really hot spicy one? There's one that tastes like red hot candies, Vietnamese maybe.
Yeah.
I can't. Anyway, you could mix the cinnamons up like that and 2 eggs. And then she says something called Swedish pearled sugar. She said, I saw this at Hy-Vee. It's called Lars Own Pearled Sugar. But it's kind of like, you know how flaky salt looks, bigger chunks of salt. So this is sugar like that. And sometimes it's round, sometimes it's flaky, but it's sprinkled sugar. You take the dough out of the fridge the next day and you roll it to, she says, 5 millimeters. So Lana and I figured about 1/4 inch into a thin, big rectangle. Then you spread 1/2 of the butter on the top, roll it up as tightly as possible into a roll from the long side, cut the roll in about 2 centimeter pieces. So Lana and I think maybe 1.5 to 2 inches. She says, my roll is usually thicker in the middle, so I cut it less thick there. I pull and twist each piece around itself to get the gooey stuff all around. But you can just put the cut pieces in the baking cups as they are. You cover with a towel and let them rise 1.5 hours. Then you prepare 1 oven sheet at a time. You brush the rolls with whisk egg sprinkle with the pearl sugar, and you bake one sheet at a time in the middle of the oven for about 8 minutes. And she says, I usually turn the sheet halfway through to get the best golden browning. Now, I know, Ingrid, because this makes a lot. Thus, she's sharing it with her neighbors. She also freezes them, and they work really well that way. So that's Ingrid's cinnamon rolls, and we will post that. So here's little fun projects. This one takes 2 days.
Yeah.
Intermittently.
Good.
Yeah.
And then you end up with cinnamon rolls. I think that's pretty darn good. There we go.
And thank you, Ingrid Anderson.
Good. So we've got good things from the oven. So let's talk about the summer garden.
Oh, well, Lana is it. She's a tomato fanatic. I know I've mentioned this before because how many varieties did we do this year, Lana?
Well, I did varieties to sell, which is all well and good. But then I did varieties. I have about 25 that I grew for myself. So, yeah. And actually, and some friends gave me some. So I have some favorites that I want to talk about here. I'll just read some of them that I read some of them that I grew. Let's see.
Technical difficulties.
I think we're back. Hello. Are things good? All right.
Okay. Great. So, technical difficulties. Here we go. Back to the tomatoes.
We're talking tomatoes. And here are some red ones that I absolutely love. Paraforma, Brandywine, Costoluto, Mortgage Lifter, St. Pierre, Marmont, Abraham Lincoln, Marion, and Rose. I grew some Amish paste, and I also really like what I consider the not red tomatoes, tomatoes that are different colors. Gold Brandywine was the first one for me this year. I didn't grab it. And it's a fine Brandywine, yes it is. And I really love Aunt Ruby's German Green, some other ones, Cherokee Purple. And I got one called Carbon, which is a Cherokee purplish sort of big purpley thing from Jordan Clausen, who has Grade A Farms down in Des Moines. And let's see. And also, a new favorite, Moon Glow, a nice little orangey thing. I like orange tomatoes. And the Garden Peach, it's a fuzzy tomato. Small tomatoes, Fargo Yellow Pear, French Row Cherry, Blonde Cupchin, Englehart, and again from Jordan Clausen at Grade A Farms in Des Moines, Bumblebee Yellow Cherry. Now, I have something to say about cherries. Cherries, tomatoes were not, I had to learn how to like cherry tomatoes because when I first was introduced, I guess as a kid, small tomato, the idea of biting into a cherry tomato, all I could think of was eyeballs. No. it's something about biting that cherry all at once. But I have since matured and I do like cherry tomato. I like any tomato. I want to talk a little bit about Costoluto tomatoes. I have grown.
Oh, they're beauties.
They're big, lobey, ribbed things. I have a book called The Heirloom Tomato from Garden to Table, Recipes, Portraits, and History of the World's Most Beautiful Fruit by Amy Goldman. It has pictures. I love pictures.
And it is, Amy Goldman was, I think, the president of the board at Seed Saver. So it's very focused on Seed Saver things that are quite available to us here in Iowa.
Yeah, they have resources and everything. But I've looked up Costoluto. Costoluto Genovese, it is often called. Although it happens to have many names, like most tomatoes, it's all marketing, folks. One thing I learned, Costoluto, this lobed, red, rather squat fruit, was one of the first kinds of tomatoes to be introduced into Europe from the New World. It started out in Spain and then moved from Italy to France. The word Costoluto means ribbed. And the literature actually refers to a tomato, and from pictures and from paintings, we can almost identify tomatoes in Spain back to 1553. That's the first reference.
Yeah, you'll see some of the, you know, all the still life with blah, 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 some of these really old paintings. Once in a while, you'll see a fruit like this because it's visually so, so beautiful. Like I'm holding one of them in my hand and it has 14 lobes. It's just the most sensual, fleshy looking.
And if even after all those centuries, it still is a really good tasting tomato. It's almost a classic for Italy. It's almost a classic cooking tomato, although you can eat it raw too. It's for paste purees and juices. Here's a little interesting fact. Pomodori castellute, the tomato castelluto, are the tomatoes of choice for conserves or tomato purees and concentrates, including one called conserva nera, cakes of dense blackish paste, which were the first semi-industrial and less than sanitary tomato product of the Italian market. They started to dry down and make tomato paste. Their data said it probably was much like fruit leather in 1840. So these tomatoes have been around for a while. There's lots of different.
Well, plus that is an old technique of drying and preserving, and Lana dries a lot of her tomatoes.
I like to dry tomatoes. Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Another tomato that I like, because why not, is the garden peach, which is actually a tomato that you pick it up and it has a fuzzy skin like a peach. Yes, it does. Yes, it truly does. And there are garden peaches or yellow peach or wassapinican peach. Acid. The yellow, it's just a gentle on your stomach sort of tomato. It's a low acid tomato. It's a really pretty thing. And yes, it does have a funny yellow and fuzzy skin. This peachy bloom is actually lots of pointed septate or Highland hairs, 180 to 360 microns long, and a small amount of hairs, 700 to 1,000 microns long. And that is just kind of part of that tomato. That's what makes the tomato have that fuzzy skin. Way too much information there, I know, but that's why it has a fuzzy skin. And so if you want to have a garden peach, look for that tomato. Some of the places that you can get seeds for all sorts of fun stuff are Seed Savers Exchange. That's in Decorah, Iowa. I have good luck from Seeds from Italy, which is out of Kansas City. You can Google any of these Seeds from Italy.
It's and they lovely. Send out. They all send out catalogs in the early part of the year.
Johnny selected seeds. A long-time seed producer, high mowing seeds. There are lots, just Google, yes, and you will find. Also, there is a chock-a-block sort of tomato catalog I get from Wisconsin called Totally Tomatoes, and it's full of all sorts of stuff. So you can find all sorts of things to experiment with out there, and it's all fun. Tomatoes are really fun things to do.
Do you have any particular advice for ones that do really well in Iowa?
Now every farm is different, so you got to remember that. Kind of look at where the tomatoes originate. There's some tomatoes that have come from Eastern Europe. Some of the black tomatoes, they're maroon. Those seem to do well here if we have a late spring. Also, I've had luck with the Castelluto. It may be kind of funny looking, but it comes every year. And one called a Paraforma, a huge, huge, funny looking, big slicer tomato. I've always had luck with that one. And there's one called St. Pierre. I got it just because I went, my grade school was St. Peter's. So I figured St. Pierre, it's a all-purpose red one. I've always had luck with that. But you have to find your own, because your garden may be different than my garden. Small tomatoes, I always have good luck with. Fence row cherry, and actually that's from a seed grower here in Calamus, Iowa. Glenn Drowns, I think his name of his seed place is called Sandhill Farm. He had this wonderful red cherry tomato. Blanc options are another yellow tomato. And this one I got from Jordan Clausen. Bumblebee, yellow cherry, bumblebee. It's actually kind of a large tomato, large cherry
it's
tomato.
It's almost orange with little yellow stripes. Quite pretty.
Little yellow stripe. And now, that's one of those that if you put it in your mouth and bite it, you think eyeball. Because it's pretty big. I mean, for a cherry tomato, it's a mouthful. Very, very nice little tomato. There we are. So thanks to all the people that share their tomato knowledge with me. I think it's really fun. Really fun. We'll get back to more talk about tomatoes in a little bit. I want to remind you that this is KHOI Community Radio, and this is the Donalana Kitchen Tasty Radio. We are back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We're talking about tomatoes and garden things today, and also some good things from the kitchen. It's a time to enjoy the bounty. Yes, it is. The music that you heard was the music of Susan Sternberg and Sam Bartlett, and that tune was called B Major, Be Happy Set. Yes, it was. We'll hear a little bit more from them later. So we're talking about tomatoes and some of my favorites. Oh, again, Donna and I both like Aunt Ruby's German green. Something about a green ripe tomato.
Well, they taste good also. But, if you're doing just a plate of fresh tomatoes and you have some red and some yellow and you put just a little bit of green in there, it's like serving a bowl of jewels or something. It's so pretty.
It is. Very good. So there is that green tomato, and you kind of have to become a connoisseur of feeling. You just kind of slightly squish or touch your tomato and see if it gives.
We do have to distinguish between green tomatoes, as in unripe tomatoes, and a tomato that is green when it's ripe.
Right. And after you've tasted one or two, you'll know what to look for. You'll know what to look for. Yes, you will. So I tried a new mulching system. And Donna asked me how I fertilize and keep my garden fertility up. We use cover crop, which means we plant stuff in the fall and turn it under in the spring. Actually, we've got sheep too, so the sheep gets to eat the cover crop, and we turn under all that good stuff. And also, I have a fine flock of laying hens. All of that manure that comes out of their house gets put in a pile, and I have three different bins of newest, middle, and ready once to a year for that all to come down. But I use the well-rotted stuff and put that under my tomatoes too. This year we tried something brand new. Dug up a place for the tomatoes and put a line of chicken manure down, just a little extra to kind of excite the soil. Not a lot.
The old stuff.
It's been sitting there for a year, was all pushed down. And then I put some wood chips over the top, and I really didn't know what to expect. So we had turned over green manure dirt, a little bit of chicken manure, just a little bit, compost, and then wood chips over the top of that. And underneath the wood chips, we always run a drip line because heaven knows it's dry this year. And somehow the tomatoes really, really like that. I think they liked the protection that the wood chips
give. Oh, wait. So when you took your seedlings out of the hot house, you kind of brushed aside the wood chips and stuck them into the ground and then put the wood chips back up around.
Right. Right. Okay. Dug a big hole, and somehow it keeps the tomatoes nice and tidy. And on top of that, I trellis them to a wire, a heavy duty wire that's pulled tight on both ends. It's over some really tall fence posts. So each tomato is trellised up with some string to a wire, and they do really, really well. I want to mention that Donna mentioned drying tomatoes, which is good. We have a recipe on the Donna Lana Kitchen recipe page that you can find for oven candied tomatoes, my favorite way to get tomatoes all season long. Put those in the little freezer bags and in the freezer. It is oven candied, oven dried tomatoes with olive oil, and so you end up with this lovely glop that is just perfect for pizza and sauces. It is wonderful stuff. You can find our recipe page at www.khoifm.org. Go to talk shows, go to the Donna Lana Kitchen, and you'll find our recipe page there. And we mentioned drying tomatoes. Our friend Mary dries tomatoes.
Oh, yeah. Mary Swander has an elaborate little, it's about the size of a big outhouse, but it's her solar dryer system, and she dries them. She also does, like Lana, with the electrical dryer too, but Mary does this one step further. She dries the tomatoes and then she grinds them into a powder and stores it in a jar, so that, you know, you just want to make an instant tomato soup. You take some hot water, you put the tomatoes in, and boom, you got it, you know, which is a lovely way to preserve it and to have it there sitting for you all winter long. Very clever. Yeah. I think she probably must put them in a food processor to pulverize them.
Because it's really pulverized.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
So another recipe from another one of my friends. This is Paula Herrera, who is from Barcelona, has a recipe for gazpacho that it's just fabulous. So it's like the traditional gazpacho, but she adds watermelon. So the watermelon, you don't taste it in the gazpacho, but it like brightens and lightens the whole tomato effect. So you're not going, oh, this is watermelon in my gazpacho. No, it just tastes like really, really good gazpacho. So her, I'm going to just talk you through this one because, you know, you don't need to write this down. You can just do it. In the blender, right, you put some fresh tomatoes, and Paula emphasizes that you really want quite nice ripe ones. You know, you don't want green, hard, flavorless tomatoes. There's no point to it. So you put in some tomatoes, and then you put in some watermelon, seedless or seeded, you know, get the seeds out.
How much?
Well, it depends on how much you want to make, you know.
How much watermelon to...
Oh, the proportion. Do not put in slightly more tomato than watermelon. You don't want the watermelon to dominate. So then you add a clove of garlic, salt, pepper, and then she adds small pieces of a slice of bread. That's to thicken it with. So, and then you just put it in the blender and buzz away until it's all creamy and, did I say olive oil? I did, right? Olive oil, salt, pepper, and garlic.
There you go.
With the tomato and watermelon. And then if you want, after you've made the puree, you can also add to it, not to the puree, you can dice up pieces of peppers or cucumbers or onions or, you know, the typical thing in gazpacho. I like it just plain without the chewy bits in it, but it's really, really good. So I highly recommend the combination of watermelon and tomato gazpacho. That's from Paula Herrera. And she said basil is not traditional. However, she likes to serve it with a little basil olive oil drizzled over it.
Ah.
Sounds lovely. Thank you, Paula, for that recipe.
Ooh, that sounds really...
It's quick and easy. Really, really. Ooh. Yeah.
Ah, summer. Watermelon, tomatoes. Oh, yes. So, let's talk peaches, huh?
Oh, I just think it's God's gift to the universe that peach and tomato season basically come at the same time.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. So one of my favorite tricks, I know we've mentioned this before in past years, but I love it, is to make a yellow tomato salsa and put pieces of peach into it. Because if you're using yellow peaches and yellow tomatoes, it's sort of like the watermelon in the tomato thing. Remember, tomatoes are fruits. So the tomato and peach yellow salsa is delicious for anything that you would put salsa on. I highly recommend it.
Great. And you had a little run-in with some warm peaches.
Oh, yes. Okay. Another one from Ingrid Anderson.
Whoa.
Yes. This is not particularly Swedish. It's just delicious and a very, very simple dessert. So Ingrid just sliced a peach in half, pulled the pit out, and then looks like she put maybe a little butter on it. And then either she oven roasted it or pan fried it. I'm not sure, but you cook it.
Huh.
And it wasn't poached. It was definitely something that made a little darkness, you know, and so you could color. You could grill them also, I think. And then the topping was lemon verbena whipped cream. So all of us are growing lemon verbena in our garden. We've just been spreading them around town. You just take a few leaves. You heat the whipped cream a little bit. You know, like you steep the leaves in the whipping cream.
Mm.
Same thing if you're doing rose geranium cream. So you steep the herb in the whipping cream. Then you have to cool it off. And then you whip it like regular whipped cream. But the lemon verbena on the slightly cooked peach was like peach cobbler, but much easier.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really delicious. So yeah, the peach was, I expect you could serve them warm and put the cold whipped cream on, but she chilled the peaches. And then of course you had the whipped cream afterwards. So lemon verbena whipped cream. And if you guys haven't found some lemon verbena, get some. There were some plants at the farmer's market this year. They grow well here. You do have to take them in the winter and then trim them back and put them out in the spring again. But lemon verbena is this thing. It kind of cascades out. It's beautiful in the garden. And then if you're out gardening and you just brush against it, the smell is heavenly.
Some woody herb, yes, like Donna said, it does pretty well here. So and it
dries well to be used during the winter as well.
It does. Very good. Well, I got inspired to do a peach cobbler. Now, peach cobbler is a warm dessert. You'd think most of the summer fruits would be cold. You kind of like, you know, cool it off. But somehow, peach cobbler is good. And I often thought, well, peach cobbler is just peaches with a biscuit on top of it, right? And I was never all that really thrilled with peaches with a biscuit on top of it. But I found a recipe in the Kitchen Diaries, A Year in the Kitchen with Nigel Slater. Nigel Slater is a
British cookbook writer. Yeah. Good, great recipes, good writer.
I like his work. So I was looking for a different way to deal with the crust, the thing you put on the top. And I like his idea for the top of the thing here. Now he's got a peach and blueberry. I made just peach, but he has a peach and blueberry sour cream cobbler. A sour cream in the top would help, of course. Here's his recipe: 3 ripe peaches, 3½ cup blueberry, juice of a lemon, a tablespoon of sugar, a tablespoon of flour, and mix that up. That's your fruit. Cut that up, ready to put in the bottom of a oven-proof dish pie. I used a very large pie pan. For the cobbler crust, 1½ cups flour, pinch of salt, 2½ teaspoons baking powder, super fine sugar, heaped tablespoon or so, 6 tablespoons butter, and 4 ounces of sour cream. Now, of course, that's going to be good and rich. You mix it up like a very moist drop biscuit. But here's good. I think this is what made it really good. Instead of just kind of dabbling that stuff on top of the fruit, he suggests making little balls, little cookies out of them, flattening them into little cookies, like taking a walnut-sized piece, make little flat things, and then lay that in sugar, top and bottom. And so you got these little sugar cookies around the top. Boy, those were good. And then set the oven to 400. And he says it's pretty darn good. Enough for 4. There you have it. There you have it.
Well, you know, cobblers are often family recipes. In my family, my mother always used a pie dough crust for the cobbler instead of a biscuit dough. Mm-hmm. So that's my idea of cobbler.
I think everybody has their own. Yes, yeah. Good. Also, I had a sadness to report. I went out to pick blueberries out at the berry patch because I don't have my own blueberry bushes, and I was there too late. This has been a dry, dry summer. And yes, there were a few blueberries still on the bush out there, but boy, what a disappointment. I just plain was too late out of the barn this year. This was not good. So,
short blueberry season then.
Short, at least, boy. No. And I wasn't the only one standing there wondering where they had lots of other things to pick, but no blueberries. And there were a bunch of disappointed people out there. Yeah. So I'm keeping my eyes open for other things that are coming.
Well, we got peaches.
We got peaches. And if you can beat the Japanese beetles to your raspberry bush by picking early in the morning, because the Japanese beetles try to get there before you get there and eat your raspberry. Oh, I had a big fight with them this year. I don't know about them. But raspberries are always nice, and I think they're just the best eaten straight from the vine. It's just good out there. Although, you do not want to pick a raspberry, put it in your mouth, and realize that you've picked a bug with it. I've done that already once this year. Learn to be vigilant, because those bugs are out there. Yes, they are.
Oh, those Japanese beetles. It's quite a sport picking them. They seem to like my morning glory. So every morning I just go out and I just crush them with my fingernails.
You may be a little squeamish early in the season, but I'm very hard-hearted. I've squashed my share this year. I have squashed and squashed. I want to take this opportunity to say this is Kay Joy and this is the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more about our show at www.khoifm.org. You can find out more about the Donalana Kitchen, but there's a lot of locally produced programs here that are just really good. This radio station is on the air 24/7, always something to listen to. And we thank you for joining us on the Donalana Kitchen. I would ask, in this time of socially distancing and spending more time closer to your kitchen, what's on your plate? If you want to share something with the Donalana Kitchen, you can send it to my email. Send it to Lana, L-O-N-N-A, at onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your ideas of how you're spending your time, how you're spending your garden. What you're cooking? What's on your plate? And also, I have a question for you listeners. Has anyone else tried the Japanese beetle scent trap? Huh? This is putting a little bag out in your, not in your garden. You're supposed to put it away from your garden. And I tried that this year. It's got a little scent button on it. It is a pheromone that evidently drives the little bugs crazy, and they go flying into this scent thing, this pheromone trap.
Paper bag?
It's in, and then it drops into a plastic bag. It holds about a quart. And if you were squeamish before about bugs, when they show up in quantity and fall into this bag, it is really something. I wonder if anybody else has tried that. You don't put it in your garden. You put it like about 30 feet away from your garden. It's supposed to like take them. I don't know if it's helped or if it's
to
just
draw them away. It's
probably has drawn them from all over the county. I don't know. I'd like to know if anybody else has tried this. It definitely works. It definitely connects up with the Japanese beetle psyche, and they just swarm in and fall into this bag. And by the end of the day, I say I've got a good 2 quarts of these suckers.
Oh my goodness.
It's just awful. But it's in a bag.
In case you don't know what a Japanese, I don't know, what are they? A quarter inch big. They're iridescent green and black.
Yeah. Yeah. In quantities. Yes. And they're crunchy. And oh boy. So every day, you're supposed to empty this bag. Now, it may not be so good for the garden. I don't know what it's doing out there, but these bags, this scent trap has been a big hit with my chickens.
Oh,
they see me coming
good
with
idea.
That bag. Now, you have to empty it. You can't just empty it into the run.
No, because they'll fly away.
So you empty it into a pail of water, stir it around. It kind of shocks little guys. Or you could put a little dot of soap in that water too, and that kind of really slows them down for a while. Then I slosh this pail of wet bugs, and they
chicken
are,
treats.
They are not on the ground long, I tell you. So even if they're not, it hasn't improved my garden much. The chickens are really, really
good bit
happy.
Of protein for the chickens.
They are. Yep. They are. Oh, my friend gave me that. He caught a catfish the other day. A catfish in the chicken run is also a big hit.
Oh, it sounds like that might smell good, huh?
Well, it did for about half an hour, but by the time it was done, it was all inside the chicken. I was surprised. I mean, if you ever wonder if chickens are like little dinosaurs, and yes, they're voracious. They are. They're little eating machines.
They produce eggs. They produce compost. They eat bugs.
Yes.
What such a deal.
Ah, well, another thing. So enough about chickens. Anyway, that if you have any wisdom about a Japanese beetle scent trap, or wisdom about chickens, or an opinion on anything, send it to
or a
me.
Great recipe. Let us know.
Yeah. Email me at Lana, L-O-N-N-A, onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. Oh, yes. We'd love to hear from you. More food stuff to talk about. Oh, long about the time the tomatoes start rolling in, at least in my garden, it's time to pull up the onions. So I have been pulling up onions. They dry in the sun for a day or two, and then I move them out of the sun. We happen to have a very nice It's a little rickety, but it works. It's a hay rack. It's under the shade, and they're all laid out there on the shade. You want the green tops, the green leaves off of each onion to dry, and also let the paper that's on the onions dry too, and then they'll keep. I can also move them into my barn after that too, but since it's been so amazingly dry, I've just left them outside. I don't want them to get rained on, but there they are. So, pulling up onions. Some of them last a long time, and some of them are the early ones. And like the Walla Wallas and the Ailsa Craigs are the early ones.
Sweet ones.
And then there's the keepers, the other end of the spectrum, at least in my garden. I always grow a few onions called copra. They are small, medium-sized, yellow and kind and hard, and they keep for a long, long time with a bunch of other kinds in between. I do like onions.
Another one you grow, which I really love, is the tropea, or we used to call them torpedoes, because they're kind of long and pointy, and they're red, and they're fairly sweet. Mm-hmm. They are delicious if you just split them in half the long way. And then lay them out on a baking sheet with a little olive oil, salt, pepper, and a smattering of balsamic vinegar and basil if you want, and then roast them in the oven.
Oh,
yeah. The onions are a vegetable unto themselves. You don't have to just add them to things. You can just cook them like that, especially the sweet onions. They're delicious.
Oh, yes. I always grow some tropeas, and they do look like torpedoes. They're called tropea because they originally come from Tropea, Italy. Yes, they do. Oh, also, I've been using my food dryer. I whacked off a bunch of garlic chives and onion chives, the green tops, laid them in the food dryer, and then after they dried, it takes a surprisingly long amount of time. You'll be surprised. And so, and then I put them in a small food processor and pulsed it so it turned like Mary was doing with the dried tomatoes. I pulsed that down so I've got onion chive or chive dust, we call it.
Yes. If you pulse it really fine in a restaurant, they'll sprinkle something. Dust, yes. Chive dust. Or tomato dust.
Oh, so I'm right with it then. I've got dust. I've been using my dried chive dust. It keeps in a jar really well. On eggs, on sweet corn, on roasted vegetables.
Put it on the sweet corn with the salt and butter.
Yes.
Oh, yum.
What a good idea. Yeah. It's pretty. It's
fancy, Lana. Huh? Huh?
And get this, popcorn.
Oh, what a great idea. We can be doing this all winter. I think I'd like to do some lovage, though. It's time to think about all those herbs, too. Yeah. You can begin to process them for winter, drying the herbs. I think I'll do lovage that way.
Oh, very good. Lots of things from the garden. Today we talked about kinds of good things from the garden. Oh, those tomatoes and onions, things are coming. We'll be talking about more of what's going on in the garden.
I think I'm
going to
have a BLT for lunch.
Oh, are you hungry or what? Yeah. All right. To mention that we'll be here every Tuesday at noon, doing the Donalana Kitchen on this fine radio station. So tune in, join us. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to contact us, go to onioncreekfarm@gmail.com. I want to mention that at the end of this week, this is the 75th anniversary of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We did something pretty amazing to those two cities 75 years ago today. Time to think about our relationship to one another and the rest of the world. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Support this fine radio station. The Donalana Kitchen comes to you every Tuesday. Live at noon. We do this live without a net. Or you can find out more by going to khoifm.org, and you can find past shows. You can find this show ready to download to your device and take us along with you and share with friends. My name is Lana Nartigo.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.